Welcome to Career Tools. Starting a new job, HBR case study, part two. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What should I do when I think I've made a mistake with a new job? What should I do when my boss doesn't seem to want to talk to me? What should I do when I just don't have time for a new member of staff? If you're a manager, obviously. Folks, our January Effective Manager Conference, obviously virtual, has sold out. And so we've added another one starting on January 27th. That's a Wednesday. We're trying to compress these to get more done in a shorter period of time. So we'll do Wednesday, Friday. So you'll be done within roughly 9 days of when you started getting all of the content that makes up the Effective Manager Conference, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, rolling out the Trinity, so on. We hope you'll attend. Come to the website and sign up. So let's pick up where we left off. We had a lot of stuff go on the first day, Wendy. There was some angst. There was a lot of drama
that Mia managed
completely unnecessary, create for herself. Wasted, unprofessional, in my opinion, drama. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So second day, she went home last night and talked to her significant other and said frustrating day and so on. We thought she overreacted to a lot. Let's pick her up on the second day. Go.
Right. So the next day she goes back to work and she does actually meet with her boss, Michael, and he gives her her first assignment, which is pretty good. Second day, good assignment. What he asks her to do is audit the processes of three departments. That is the warehouse, the supply chain, and delivery, all of which are essential to the mission of the nonprofit that she works for, which is, you know, sending out goods and services to people in need. And each unit is combined of employees that came from different places. So part of the reason they want to audit it is because all of those people had different processes and they've come together, and that's never, you know, a good thing for strategy. You need to kind of look at everything as a whole. And then there's some recent hires, there's some older people, and some people were brought in with the idea that they would experiment with some new strategies. So he's sent her out there to see whether or not the new strategies that have been suggested are more efficient than the ones that people who've been around about a while are using.
Yeah, okay.
And she doesn't like this assignment.
Yeah, well, to be clear, though, it's not what she expects. It's, you know, it's one thing if they say we were going to have you do A and then they have you do A and you don't like it. This is a case where she thinks that they said you're going to do A and then they said here's B to do.
Yeah. And I think she's hugely wrong. I think it's an awesome first assignment because it allows her to go and meet all of those people in departments which are critical to the running of the nonprofit, to its mission. And she gets to meet them all. She gets to ask them a whole bunch of questions. She gets to find out what everybody's doing and how they're doing it and what they think of what they're doing it. And then she gets to make some recommendations, which I love that kind of stuff. But the idea that a new person would have carte blanche to go out and talk to anybody she wants in the most critical areas of the company, I don't understand why she doesn't think this is awesome.
I saw this a little different. I don't think she can go. I don't think this is the most important part of the company, because based on the setup to the case study, what she wanted was field work, right? Now, we could make the case privately. Well, you just can't walk into a job and go in the field on the first day. But that's not made clear in the case study. We try not to go too extracurricular on this thing. But I approach this from a different perspective. There may be a communication problem. I suspect there is between her and Michael. But I also apply what I call the flip-flop test. And the flip-flop test says this. Mia was expecting to go into the field, okay? And she's not, okay? She believes, and in fact, I think the case study gives us enough to say, that's a reasonable expectation. That's the job she thought. Would you agree that?
Yeah, at least partly. Yeah, okay. It was a reasonable expectation.
Yeah, okay. It's a reasonable expectation. So the flip-top test is this. If you're expecting A and you get B, Okay. You're entitled to be disappointed. If the reverse happened, mm-hmm. and you'd consider it good. In other words, somebody says to you, you're going to work in the warehouse and you're going to work for this company because you love their mission. And then they tell you, actually, you get to go in the field, right? Mm-hmm. Do you see the difference?
Yeah.
Would they have interviewed her for a field job and said to her before the interview, during the interview, and when they offered the job, you will not go in the field, you'll only go in the warehouse?
No.
Would they have ever done that if they thought there was a chance she would be in the field? No way.
No, right?
On the other hand,
selling the field.
Exactly. Stuff. Exactly. But you flip-flop that. If she were interviewing for a warehouse job, might they say you're going to be supporting the field? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in other words, they know what the sizzle is. And so I think companies do this all the time. We have an entire podcast called The Dangle about it. That's a very specific form of selling the sizzle. But it's also could just be really poor communication. And based on what Michael, her boss, has done so far, I would say, yeah, he's a poor communicator. Now, some of you say, well, we don't have enough information. I said, well, yeah, I do. It's been 24 hours.
Right.
And she's had almost no contact with her boss. And when somebody says to me, well, that's kind of the way it happens all the time. Yeah, that's right. 90% of people in the world aren't good managers. That's why we've been saying for years, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed person is king or queen, mm-hmm. right? That's all it takes is a little bit of effort. You know, you don't have to be great at management. You just have to not suck.
Yep.
And the vast majority of people suck. So I wouldn't agree with you that it's an awesome first assignment. If what had happened to me had happened to me, mm-hmm. that said, I would agree with you that it's a great first job if you take a sidestep and look at it from the standpoint of the opportunity she has. But for a person who's thinking, I'm going to get to do X, the sizzle, the cool part, and that's my job, I get the steak and the sizzle, and then being told you're going to work in the warehouse, it's a demotion. It's negative. Now, it may be entirely her fault. We don't know that for sure. We try to avoid the extracurriculars, as I've said, but yeah. I agree. There's all kinds of pluses, Wendy, but that doesn't mean, I don't think you can convince Mia it's awesome. I just think you want her to think it's awesome, and I can see why, but no, I don't. Yeah. And by the way, guys, we have a checklist of what to do during your first 90 days in the new job series of casts. And you could have gotten a bunch of stuff done in there based on that.
All of them, meeting the new people. And so instead of being pleased, instead of seeing the positives, which...
Yeah. Which yeah. I would argue in the first 30 days, you ought to.
Yeah.
I recommend it. Guys, if you're looking for areas where things aren't going to go well... Trust me, beginnings are delicate times. You're in a high state of flux. Your boss is in a high state of flux. Your boss probably doesn't know what she's doing. No offense, but she doesn't. We just talked about that. And so the idea that we're probably pushing the limit here, but the idea that we're responding so quickly to any potential slight or negative is a bad sign. Mm-hmm. But okay, sorry, keep going.
So instead of being pleased, like I think she should be, but also, you know, I can see why she isn't. She asked her manager about this field work that she was promised that she would have. And
yeah.
It says that her boss looks surprised and annoyed. And if you've listened to the first part of the reason for this is the recruiter promised her, or the HR person recruited promised her this field work, and the manager doesn't seem to have known what the HR person promised her. And so,
which is unconscionable.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, on the manager's part, it's like, why would you let people speak for you about a job that's
well, it's also the recruiter's part. I mean, the job is not that and the recruiter promised it, recruiter, basically, I would argue what the recruiter's doing is saying, I can get this job closed by promising stuff that I know the manager can't deliver. This is like, hey, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash, and the recruiter will not be there to help solve the problem.
No. So he's annoyed because she has already asked yesterday about field work, and he doesn't know what field field work she's talking about. And so now she's asked twice in 2 days about something that he doesn't know about, and he wants this job done. And you know, to my mind, she's been given an all expenses paid vacation and then asked about like a new car. The two things are so unrelated in the hiring manager's mind.
Yeah, I think that's what we can say Michael would be feeling. Yeah, good.
Okay. Yeah.
And so she comes across not as a team player, right?
Yeah. And she doesn't want to help him. She could, and to his mind, potentially, she took the job with the idea that she could turn it into something she wanted. Now, he doesn't know that what she was promised is what she wanted and not what he has. But you can start to see where this miscommunication or this... The two things that are going to start to break down their relationship, which has hardly had a chance to form, really quickly.
Hey, and by the way, guys, if you're a licensee, you probably already know this, because I just mentioned the part about being a team player. You may not know, and if you're not a licensee, I suspect you don't know, that you can, of course, view our show notes online. And if we mention another cast, there's a link to it in the show notes. So you can go to this cast, which is always at the top of the most current podcast list, when it comes out, obviously. And then you can click on the link and go to the How to Be a Team Player podcast. Okay.
So this is a pretty, to my mind, a pretty dangerous game for Mia to be playing, because Michael doesn't have anything invested in her at the moment.
But okay, you say it's a dangerous game for her to play. Do you think she's playing a game? Do you think she thinks she's playing a game?
No, you're right.
Okay.
Maybe that's a characterization.
So, in a third party, yeah, dangerous game. But Mia would say, I'm not playing a game. I'm simply asking the organization to do what I think the organization said it would do. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
But from a third party, you could say, oh boy, we got a problem here, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is?
Well, he doesn't have anything. He hasn't put any work into making her a good employee. If she left right now, it would make no difference to him whatsoever.
Yes, exactly.
She has no value to him because she doesn't know anything. She hasn't done anything. And for the first 6 to 12 months of any job, this is true of anybody, not just her. Until you know some people, until you've been able to do something, you're just dead weight. You are literally being paid for having no value. And if you want to play, not play, it's the wrong word, but if you want to start demanding things or trying to manipulate situations to your ends, you've got to remember that it's really easy to let you go when you haven't provided any value.
Yeah. And in fact, if this situation, if Mia genuinely feels that, and Michael genuinely feels that's not accurate, Michael could easily call her and say, boy, we need to talk. We've got a problem here. Mm-hmm. And he might end up feeling guilty after the fact that she's left her previous employment. Not that he's responsible for that. But he might have to say, look, you're wanting X, and I don't. You can have X, but in 2 years. And if we promised you that, then I'm really sorry. I don't think we promised you that. You might have been led to believe it, or you might have assumed it. But if this is going to be a response to projects like this, we should cut bait now.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say that. I would feel bad about the disruption to your life, but I don't feel it's completely our responsibility. And I'm sitting here thinking that I ought to have that I could have this conversation with you. And I thought, no, if I'm thinking I ought to have this conversation, then I ought to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. 2 minutes in and she's already a problem child.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I think you have to be careful saying that. I don't think she thinks she's a problem child.
No.
She's unaware of it. Mm-hmm. And she feels she's standing on reasonably solid ground. And I think that's the point. I think it's one thing to call somebody a problem child when they are behaving like a problem child. I don't think she thinks that. And I think some problem children know that they are behaving like a problem child. And that's not the case here.
Yeah. And that's why we're doing this, because we like to explain to people.
Yeah. Michael's mistake, in part, is not assigning the work problem properly. He could have used the first part of the delegation model, or, you know, there's all kinds of things that he could handle differently. And this is a classic managerial mistake. You don't understand the basics. You don't understand the building blocks. You don't understand responsibilities and authorities and guidance and commanders or leaders' intent. You don't understand how to communicate. And that's not an indictment of everyone who's a manager. It's the vast majority of managers don't know this stuff, and nobody's ever taught us this stuff. And if Michael had done a better job in translating it to her, particularly if didn't we discover at the end of the first day that she already had a concern?
Yes.
Yeah. So he knows that. So therefore, maybe he would say, now look, don't worry that this is not frontline stuff, because you're going to be supporting the front lines and you're going to be a hero to the people on the front lines when you get this stuff all straightened out. Mm-hmm. Because we've got lower than acceptable fulfillment rates from these people to the people in the field at the tip of the spear. And your knowledge of this will make you a hero to them and will make you better if and when you get to go out in the field.
This also reminds me of the weakness question, in that everybody has a weakness, because if you have 10 attributes, right? Five of them have to be below average. That's, or below the middle. That the mean? Below the mean. Because that's the way math works. And that's true of every job as well. If there's 10 things you have to do, five of them are below the mean of the things you enjoy doing, but you don't get to not do them. And so just because it's something you don't want to do, don't enjoy doing, doesn't mean you don't have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And we would say, if your boss asks you to do something in your first day or week, you say, yes, no problem. Mm-hmm. Happy to do it. Yeah. Okay, good. So what about, let's go over her whole first month.
Okay, so for the first month, for the next 3 weeks, so she'd been there 2 days, so this is 3 weeks and 2 days, she spends on this auditing project. She goes around the departments and finds out what's going on and starts to audit them. And it says in the text that he forgot to introduce her to some of the department heads, and so they ignored her repeated emails, which just made me want to yell, stop sending emails.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. That's the art of escalation, which is a cast that'll come out at some point in Manager Tools, probably in the next 6 months. The art of escalation, that the answer to an unresponded to first email is not a second email. And folks, we could do 20 casts on that alone.
And maybe he forgot because he forgot on purpose. Maybe he forgot because he's incompetent. Maybe he forgot because he's overwhelmed. It doesn't matter. There's nothing to stop her standing up and walking over to the warehouse and saying, hey, I've been trying to talk to Bill. I know he doesn't know who I am. I just started. Can you just point him out so that I can go at least introduce
myself? Hi, Bill. I'm Mia. Oh, do I know you? Yeah, you got an email from me, but you didn't know who I was. You don't say, I sent you an email a week ago and you haven't replied. You say, you know what? I'm new. You probably had no concept. Might have gone to spam for all I know, and that's okay. Yeah.
You know, don't continue the same behavior and expect a different result.
Yes. And take responsibility for yourself. When there mm-hmm. are problems in your organization, look for the solution to the problem in increasingly larger concentric circles around your own desk.
Yeah. And do something different. Preferably something that allows you to communicate directly and synchronously with the person you're trying to talk to.
And this is interesting, that do something differently. This is part of the problem with this escalation thing. People think of escalation as I'm going to my boss. Mm-hmm. That's not the whole story. Escalation isn't just vertical in the hierarchy. It's also through medium and through deadlines and through form. There are all kinds of ways to escalate, and different people respond differently to different forms. And just the idea that you would send another mail, and I've said this before, I'll say it again until I retire, that email beguiles you into believing that it's useful because it is efficient for you. But efficiency for you is not the reason for communication. The reason for communication is effectiveness for the listener. And that trade-off, in many cases, is irrelevant. But in special cases, like escalations, like conflict, like newness, like risk, that trade-off is bad. Mm-hmm. And this is a classic case where a second email is bad. It's dumb, and you shouldn't do it.
You know, on the other hand, Matt, you know, the manager, Michael's job is to make sure that he is enabling his team to get the work done that needs doing. And yeah, all he needed to do was send an introductory email and it would have been done. It was 2 minutes.
Yeah. He's a tool. And if he were to say, actually, I didn't introduce her for a reason because I wanted her to learn. Okay. But you've got people not responding to her and you're not telling her that she's not doing what she should be doing. That's a problem. Like, I'm not going to tell you. And then I'm not going to give you any feedback. No offense, but that's every crummy manager I've ever known. Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether your people are good or bad or indifferent. You can be a crummy manager with good people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If your people are good, that doesn't mean you're a good manager. You could still be a crummy manager.
And so many are.
Yes.
So 3 weeks later, she's finished the assignment and it takes her 5 days to get 30 minutes with him on his calendar to review the results. And the thing that struck me when I read that was, you've been there 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. You must know more about him than that sentence of it takes you 5 days to get a meeting with him implies, right?
Yeah.
You know, for example, is he a reader or a listener, which we have a cast about, you know, like people, some people like to see the written report first and some people like to talk about it first. So maybe the reason she can't get a meeting with him is because she hasn't sent him the report for him to read. So that now he's thinking, well, I don't need a meeting yet because I haven't read it and I don't know what we're going to discuss.
You know, in situations like this, where there's a coming cataclysm between two people, everybody always has good reasons.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. And, yeah. You know, what's his
I think it's a great point. Everybody's, you know, everybody's fine until they're not fine.
Yeah. And even from this case study and what's written in it, we can tell something about his DISC profile. Like, he has to be a D or a C because otherwise he just spent time meeting with her, right? He's not a people person. He's a task person.
Yeah.
And since he's blown off her attempts to ask for advice, he's probably a high D because a C would have given her the instructions on how to do things.
Yeah.
A D expects you to do the work just like they do. Like, just go get it done.
Yeah. And that's another cast we mentioned in the show notes, effective relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that tells you everything you need to know about
It tells you not everything you need to know, but it tells you enough to be infinitely more effective than how she is being. Yeah. Now, look, again, we don't want to go extracurricular, but there's no evidence. There's no information in the case study that suggests she interacted with Michael other than the time she's asked for advice in 3 weeks. And so they, by definition, then they don't have a relationship. Actually, that's not true. They do have a relationship. He's her boss and she's his subordinate. She's a team member. They have a relationship, but they have no trust, right? That's where they don't have a, see, this is where words begin to fail us in the professional world because we haven't migrated to understand more about the value of people, mission first, people always, where we say, oh, well, they don't have a personal relationship. Well, personal relationship sounds like, are we talking about intimacy?
Mm-hmm.
No. So we don't have a trusting relationship, or put differently, maybe we don't have a professional relationship. We have an organizational relationship, but not a professional relationship.
They have an org chart relationship, but no real relationship.
Well, and I would argue, if there's no relationship between a boss and a subordinate, between a boss and a direct, whose fault is it? It's the manager's. Okay. So in that sense, look, it's 51-49, but it's definitely more the manager's responsibility than the direct's. If that were the case, it was the direct's responsibility to create the relationship, we would have nothing but sycophancy in organizations. Mm-hmm. And that certainly wouldn't be efficient or effective, either one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she, on the other hand, she's not helping herself, right? She could have done 3 10-minute boss one-on-ones where she says, hey, boss, I just need 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know where I am on this audit project and what I'm planning to do next.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not personal. It's not trust, you know, but at least it's a communication.
Yeah. Look, and the manager has that sign on his forehead. Watch out. Watch out what you say. I could fire you. And he probably doesn't think that. He thinks he's just a super individual contributor that happens to have manager responsibilities. And he's probably like Irving Azoff, who said, famously said, I think this management, this talent management business would be so much better. He managed the Eagles. This talent management business would be so much easier without the talent, right? That's how a lot of high C managers say, right?
I had exactly that conversation with Mike yesterday.
I know who Irving is. He's been here. He's not far from me. And if you don't talk to your directs, then you leave it up to their imagination. And their imagination starts with the first of the two emotions, which is fear. And the only solution to that, to wear down the fear, to move it into a trust column, is communication.
And he's thinking, oh, well, she must know I'm busy. She must know it's not personal.
Right.
And she's thinking, oh, well, he doesn't care enough about me to find out what I'm even doing.
Yeah. Folks, I've been getting a lot of email lately about the suspension coming later this month of the daily Things I Think going out to everyone in our community rather than just to licensees. Writing daily Things I Think has taken a lot of time and a lot of effort, and I get hundreds of mails every day responding to it. And I've got other stuff to do, and I feel like we're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to the COVID and governmental responses and so on. So therefore, I'd like to suggest for those of you who do like getting Things I Think, you can still get it, but you'll have to become a licensee. And for those of you who don't know, licensing is our core business. We believe that the value we provide you in the casts and then in addition through the show notes and many other benefits of being a licensee make it worth your while to pay us $200 a year to support the community and our ongoing efforts to help every manager in the world be effective and every professional be productive. Become a licensee, come to the website to do so. Thanks. Okay, so it goes on.
Yeah, so they actually get this meeting. She tells him what she's been doing and what her results are from this audit, and he says that she's done a good job. And then he says, could you look at some different metrics? And she asks again about this field work that she'd been promised, but the phone rings. And he just waves her away.
Wouldn't it be great to be a HBR case study writer? That the important question happens. She asks about different duties and, you know, the sizzle or getting out in the field. And his phone rings and he waves her away.
Yeah. It's like being able to write a screenplay and have exactly what you want happen at the right moment instead of life. But, you know, he has just complimented her work. He's just said, you did a good job. And she kind of throws it back in her face by saying, yeah, right. And what about this thing I want? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good look. Yeah. As a general rule, you got to remember the medicine ball rule. Your boss talks to you. It's like they're throwing a medicine ball at you. You don't immediately throw the ball back. You can't with a medicine ball. You have to catch it, step back, accept it, reflect on it, or not reflect on it, but think about it and respond to that and let that happen. And then if you think that is a good time and it's not, would not be a good time right after, you just got complimented to say, hey, good. Now, can I have a raise? Right? That's what causes a lot of managers to not give positive feedback. I'm afraid they'll ask me for a raise. Well, for the record, guys, we do have a podcast about how to respond to when people ask for a raise. And I will tell you the first word in the podcast is no.
No.
So then she goes around, she goes and talks to a colleague, a fellow worker, about getting his attention. And the colleague shares some gripes about the organization in general, right? Typical stuff that all larger, mid to larger or fast growing organizations have. And then Mia asks this colleague about getting into the field. And the colleague says, quote, that never happens, unquote.
Yes. I mean, getting some perspective on
is good. His totally work, good.
Yeah. It's a good idea as long as, you know, they're doing it professionally and not in a whiny way.
Yeah. And I also think you ought to have friends at work, not your boss, but colleagues that you can go to and say, hey, look, I'm hearing this all the time. And they say, oh my gosh, you're using the old system. Mm-hmm. Or, oh yeah, you're going to get that from him, but he's the only one that's like that. Or,
right.
You know, stay away from this guy. You know, unfortunately, he's a little handsy or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, it's important to have colleagues like that. In fact, I'm pretty sure one of the engagement surveys, maybe even the Gallup survey, made a big deal a number of years ago about the question, do I have a close friend at work?
Right.
Which we think overstates the situation, but still is relevant that a major survey included such an interesting sort of metric in their evaluation of people's engagement and therefore implied productivity, which I disagree with. So I actually think that's good.
Yeah.
But then she only asked one person. And then that person, and you know what's going to happen next. Me is going to say, well, I asked somebody and they said that never happens. Well,
and that's
you know,
not
it'd be good know, to have talked to 10 people first.
Yeah. You could have, and just because it's never happened doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Doesn't mean they don't have it. Maybe the HR person has this plan for getting people out in the field and has not shared it with anyone, including Michael, apparently. But it's going to happen. And now she's got this thing in it, being up on it, that she was promised something. It never happens. It's not going to happen. And that is not conducive to doing good work, being productive, developing relationships, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I would argue that, you know, there's a saying in politics that you should try to control the narrative. Okay. Now, I actually, this is not politics, but it is, I mean, I've said before that politics are nothing more than relationship effects in the workplace. And so, therefore, this is a form of relationship effects, the utter lack of one between Michael and Mia. You know, if there is going to be a story about you, you want to control that story. You want to make sure you influence that story significantly. Now, in this case, Mia is being told a story. It may be true. It may not. And maybe this person is accurate. Maybe they aren't. But by the way, we have guidance for managers about stopping gossip. And I think it's a podcast called How to Stop Gossip, isn't it?
It is. It's well named.
And by the way, gossip is really the wrong word. Gossip implies some things that aren't helpful to managers. What you need to think of is what people are talking about. And the words people say and how they say them and who they say them to, that's all behavior. And behavior is part of the manager's purview. You said a minute ago that Mia took drastic action, and that is Mia called HR.
She calls HR and complains. It's just really drastic.
I love this part. Yeah, but here's the thing. You say drastic. I get that. I agree. Because in our minds, there's a whole bunch of stuff that could have happened before. And even if it hasn't happened for, how long has it been? Just a month?
Coming up on 1 month, yeah.
Yeah, okay. In your first month, you haven't done it and you're frustrated. Okay, give yourself a start over and give yourself another month at working hard on the relationship. Okay, there's all kinds of things, proactively communicating with him, going to meet him, learning what his schedule is, befriending his admin or the person who sits next to him, finding out, you know, paying attention to his email style, responding to his email style, sending him proactively documentation and so on, asking to set up a briefing where you don't ask for anything, you only give him information and build up the balance of accounts a little bit. So you could say, you know, after the second month, you could say, okay. I mean, because look, if you've been there a month, it's long enough that your old job that you may want to go back to is probably at risk of being filled by another person. So another month, probably not going to kill you. That doesn't mean I wouldn't suggest you get your resume ready. I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing for me to be doing. And I got in trouble for that recently, Wendy. I said to somebody, you need to get your resume ready. Well, what are you saying? The person said on the phone. And I said, I'm sorry. I'll tell you what I'm saying. What I'm saying is get your resume ready. Well, what does that mean? Dude, what it means is get your resume ready. You're telling me right now you're concerned about your boss and whether or not he is who you want him to be. This is just, if you look outside the window and it's raining, you put on a coat. don't blame me for the coat. I mean, Mark, what are you saying? Are you saying I should quit? I'm like, you know how you'll know when I'm thinking you should quit? I will say to you, you should quit.
You know, when you said that, immediately into my head popped Cassie, who started work with us 9 months ago, nearly a year ago. Rule number one with working for Mark. He tells you what he thinks what he tells you is what he wants you to know. Like there is no artifice. There's no cleverness. Yeah. But there's no cleverness in what's said. If he says, get your resume ready, he means go open the document, work through it, so it's accurate. That's it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, related to Cassie, who's just been an awesome addition to our team. I ask people questions here like, yes or no, that number is correct. And the first word out of their mouth is well. And I just say, I'm sorry. This is not what I wanted to know. Come back to me when you can answer my question. And I actually was told by someone recently, I don't know what you want me to say. I'm sorry. In what way, as a human, as an adult, as a free person, that you think me telling you what I want you to say is more important than you telling the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah. Anyway.
Just made me laugh. Anyway, complete distraction. So she calls the HR guy and she talks to him about how unnecessarily difficult her assignment has been and how rarely she's interacted with Michael. And then she says, plus he doesn't seem open to me doing any direct humanitarian work, even though that was a big pull for me. So what happens next is the HR recruiter calls Michael and they have a conversation that's not included in the case study, but we can assume that it happens. And then she gets this very stiff, very formal email that says, I spoke to Saul. I understand your concerns. I'll work harder at making sure that you're happy. And she's then very confused that was the result of her conversation, which I don't think is, I don't understand confused.
Yeah. Plus, I like the part, plus he doesn't seem open to my doing any direct, even though it's a big, telling people how your boss seems is almost never a good idea. And by the way, this is a classic case that she goes to HR and I have no doubt that HR aided and abetted this. She thinks that HR is her private therapist.
Yes.
That she can go and she at any time can outrank her boss. HR has a bigger hammer than her boss, and HR will keep her anonymous and have a conversation. Of course, like any idiot manager wouldn't know that, oh yeah, this is clearly Mia.
But HR will straighten him out.
Yeah. And we don't even have to have 20 more podcasts about HR, right? We don't hate HR. We love good HR. We just think there's not a lot of good HR in the world. And many, many HR people mistakenly say, they not only think, they not only believe, they say to people, we're your first line of defense. We're your voice. That's crap. That's stupid. It's wrong. It's unethical for HR ever to say that. You're not. There's no company that is built that HR is your first line of defense. Your first line of defense is your boss. And that's why companies have open door policies, because if you don't get what you need from your boss, your boss is obligated by an open door policy. I've said this before, folks. I'll say it again. When your boss says, my door is always open, that's not an open door policy. That is your boss trying to be available. Availability is not open door. Open door is the authority from the CEO of any individual. If they don't get satisfaction from their boss, they're automatically entitled to go to the boss's boss. So HR is not your first line of defense. And I wouldn't be surprised if HR did that. And that said, I will tell you, HR did what they're supposed to do, which is call Michael. Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like with Michael's email saying it's stiff and formal, HR said, you need to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to lose her. And that was probably poorly done. Now, it's possible that Michael, being, as you say, a high C, has never had to do that before. And so it sounds stiff and formal when in fact HR did it well. I've seen both. It could be HR, it could be the manager. If I had to guess, I'd say it's HR, but hey, that's just me.
Yeah. So basically she ran and told tales on him.
Yeah.
And we talked earlier about all of the things that she could have done, investing the energy into that relationship and getting to know him and working well with him. You know, you don't even have to like your boss. You just have to work for them. Like, it's not like there's a rule that says, oh, you have to be besties. You know, that's not
there actually is a rule. There actually is a rule. You can't be besties.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't have to like him. She just has to learn how to work with him.
Yeah. And I think he owns part of it, too. Because she's brought it up 2 or 3 times, and he should have said, let's have a bigger conversation about this. I can't do anything for 6 months, and I will do my best. And let's have a discussion about how we misled you or how you felt misled or whatever. And if she knew now, in 6 months, she would get it. I'm making that up. I don't know that he could or couldn't at this point in the case study. That might be enough for her to go, I'm not going to wait that long. You guys misled me.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm going to go on Glassdoor and tell everybody. Don't believe them when they say field work.
Yeah, which reminds me, go on Glassdoor before you take a job.
Which, but by the way, I'll mention, that will be much more harshly received by recruiting. You'll be undercutting recruiting. She thinks she's getting to Michael, but she's not. I think the recruiter dangled. I think Michael's not a good enough manager to know that to have a good enough relationship with his recruiter to avoid that. Yeah.
So there's some more things that are kind of illuminating in his email. One of the things he says is, it's difficult for me to meet regularly with the members of my team, which is the first time he's mentioned any other team members.
Yeah. What's funny about that is he says team. It's like you can say the word team when you throw a rope, a lasso around 4 people standing on a street corner going in different directions. Mm-hmm. That's not a team. You could say my direct reports. You could say, I don't know, the people on the org chart underneath me. So obviously we would recommend one-on-ones, which I'm sure Michael would say, I just don't have time for. Yeah. Except like the Queen of England makes time for it. And buddy, you ain't her.
Exactly. You know, and one-on-ones give you back time, according to all the people I know who manage.
Well, no, it's not just according to all the people you know who manage. We guarantee it. Anyone who does one-on-ones the Manager Tools way, MTO3s, we guarantee you'll get more time back in your calendar or your money back. Yeah. I mean, we could make this all about management if we want.
We could. Yeah. And there's a million reasons why.
Yeah. And in a few months, Mike will be able to give positive, negative feedback and then start delegating. And yeah.
So. He also says there are certain tasks that will greatly benefit the organization that I'd like you to stick with. And I just think, if only you told her what those benefits were.
Dude, or better yet, hey, I've just talked to HR. Hey, the male is dumb. Mm-hmm. You know, he should call her.
Yeah.
Right? I would recommend he call her and say, hey, look, I just talked to HR. Obviously, we're off on the wrong foot. Let's start again. I'll come to you. Or why don't we have breakfast tomorrow? What time do you get in? I'll call the guy in the warehouse and tell him, you're not coming over. We'll cancel that meeting unless you and I sit down and talk about this. And I particularly want to talk about a couple of things I was thinking about having you do that I think would be great for the organization and for you. But we're already off on the wrong foot about that. You think X, I think Y. Maybe I need to hear from you whether you think it'd be valuable or not. Yeah.
So... this is kind of where the story of the case study ends. And
the story ends with her going to HR. I love it.
Yeah. And then the case study asks, what should she do? And there are 2 experts who answer that question, 1 for and 1 against her leaving. What the case study says is, after she gets that email, she talks to her boyfriend about her options. And the options are staying, leaving and going back to her old job or finding a new job.
Right.
And the way that these case studies are written, there's always an expert for and against. So the person who says leave says she's a marketable candidate. She got 100% pay rise to come to this job. So she's clearly someone that people want to employ. She went through a process. She got an offer. What annoyed me about this answer is that the expert then says, oh, I was in a similar situation and I decided to leave and dumb. This is what happened to my career.
Dumb. The idea that you can take one data point out of a sea of data points and then compare it to one other data point and say, this should happen to me. This is the problem with all these executives that sort of get retired or retired and they feel they still have energy to serve and they start telling people their story. I'm sorry, you're not Steve Jobs. You're not Bill Gates. You're not, gosh, I'm blanking on her name, somebody I really respect. She used to run Girl Scouts, and now she's in charge of, she was in charge of the Drucker organization for a long time. I'm sorry, you're not her. And the complex combination of atoms that makes up you is fundamentally different than the complex combination of atoms and experiences that make up someone else, even if they're at the same point in your career. And I can give you, for every one person who tells you you should leave because look what happened to me, I can tell you two people who left who say, yeah, shouldn't have left.
And it's so easy to look back and say, that was a good thing that happened. I got fired.
Yeah.
That meant I talked to Mark. And so I ended up with this job, which I feel is, this is where I was supposed to end up. And that's how all of my experience came to this moment.
Yeah.
But I could equally say, I got fired. It was rubbish. And I, you know, yeah, lost a bunch of stuff.
Post hoc, ergo propter hoc, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Just because one thing happens before another doesn't mean it caused the other thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And just because it works out one way for one person doesn't mean it will work out that way for you. And
yeah. So her advice about leaving, we disagree. We think Mia, we would recommend to Mia if she asked us to stay. Mm-hmm. But it goes further. I think that you can't know that in the moment. And if people are giving you guidance based on what happened to them, that's bad guidance, folks. Unless it's your best friend that you've known somebody for 20, 25 years and they know you intimately, don't allow somebody's individual instance to sway you one way or the other, and then go home and tell your spouse, well, I talked to Bob and Bob said he did this and it worked out good for him. Yeah, but Bob's a jerk and you're a nice person. Or Bob loves new things and you like being at home and reading all weekend. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, but the second expert says she should stay.
Yeah, and one of the points he makes, which I thought was a good point, was this role is more challenging than her previous one was. If she got 100% pay rise, that usually means the job's at least 50% more difficult. She's taking on new and different responsibilities, and of course, that comes with a period of discomfort, of struggle. New people, new processes, new workplace, new tasks. Of course, it's not going to go perfectly in the beginning. Every job is hard at the beginning. That's why, you know, you shouldn't, always think you're always exhausted the first 3 months of any job. And it's because you're learning so much all at once.
Right.
It's like, you're like a baby. You need naps.
Well, yeah, I would say, it's in part because you're learning so much. It's also because you're fearful and there's all change is stress. And so you have very high stress levels. I'm sure you're cortisol levels are through the roof in the first 3 months. Isn't there there used to be a thing that listed how stressful certain things were?
Yes.
Right?
A new job is like 3.
Yeah, it's pretty high. It's right up there with going to the dentist or something for some people. I guess there's really bad dentists in the world. But I also think I had a different experience. When I shared this with you, my experience was all on the organization. I'm sorry, my focus. Mm-hmm. I understood what they were going to ask me, should Mia stay or go? And by the way, if you always recommend people are going to leave in this situation, don't be surprised if organizations don't thrive. The individual individual ethics and professionalism really obligate you to stay. Now, I would argue that the manager has an obligation and recruiting has an obligation to apologize or to try to make things right or to explain the situation so that both sides put it. But if we tell people, hey, if you don't like your job, quit, don't be surprised if that creates perverse incentives or conflicting incentives, at least, in the marketplace for talent, because it will. And in fact, it has. And it's all the things that organizations don't make up stupid stuff to do. They respond to the environment they're in, which is including the market for talent. My take on this whole thing was, geez, did HR, recruiting, and Michael just completely blow this?
Yeah.
Completely and utterly blown. And I'm thinking the way Drucker taught me to think, which is, okay, is this a symptom or do we have a fundamental problem? What are the incentives in place in recruiting? Are we supposed to close jobs fast? Mm-hmm. Maybe the recruiters have figured out the quickest way to close a job is to tell people you'll get to work in the field.
Yep.
And then they can say, well, I'm sorry. I was led to believe, and I'm sorry, your manager. I have this one story over here, this one person who actually does do it. It's like the movie, The Running Man, where they show three people that escaped the clutches of the state's goons. And it shows them living on a beach in Hawaii when in fact they're dead. So I just think that there's a systemic problem here. I think this is a symptom and not the cause. And folks, you will be in situations where a symptom will hurt your situation. And the answer is usually assertive communication, relationship building, trust, and truth in most cases. And a lot more work before you accept a job. A lot more work before you accept a job. And if somebody wants to interview you, I just got an email this week from somebody. We're recording this on a Friday. Somebody wrote and said he happens to be in a particular industry in the R&D field, and his boss, the person who just interviewed him, is responsible for $1 billion in revenue, and this boss is going to hire him to handle a quarter of it, okay? So $250 million in revenue. And the potential boss spent a half an hour with him. That's all.
It's crazy.
Now, to be fair, I don't know if she spent a half hour with some people and then went on to have 2 or 3 or 4 hour talks. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry. If you're going to be responsible for $250 million of my income that I'm responsible for, you're going to live at my house for a week. So in this case, it may be a question of the difference between recruiting as a relationship and recruiting as a transaction. So. And I can go on and on and on. That's why I shared this with you, because it hit my hot buttons, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, and mine too. So it was kind of different. It's not as actionable as everybody as we normally are, but I thought it was a good way to bring a lot of things together, and we hope that people enjoyed it and learned from it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. That's it. A long one here, but we thought we'd just cram it all into 1 week so you didn't have to wait again for the ultimate reveal, which you probably already knew. This is Career Tools, where we want to help every professional be productive. See you next week.
Bye, everyone.